Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting The Kingdom Choir, Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Great to be with you, Paul, on this last Friday in September, the first Friday of autumn. Can you believe it?
Yes, I'm wearing long pants.
I noticed that. You are very stylish.
Well, it's. I'm planning for tonight. I'm going to a high school football game, and I just thought, it is fall. But I'm still going to wear shorts where possible, okay?
Yeah, you have worn shorts every day this summer in here, and you said you were going to try to last until October 1st, but that's all right. We'll give you dispensation for wearing long pants today.
It's not cold yet, but you just feel that, and the trees are beginning to drop a leaf or two.
Yep.
No. I love fall, I love spring, I love summer, and then I have a lot of feelings about winter.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Paul, we have another really big show in the works today. Just a few minutes from now, Sheila Schofer is going to join us, and she is the new director of the Ames Public Library, and she's going to share her vision of the library's future.
That sounds good to me because I'm a library guy myself.
You bet. But let's take a look first at what's going on in news from the pages of the Ames Tribune this past week, and there was plenty to report. Saturday brought word about new rules proposed by the Iowa Department of Agriculture, which would impose more stringent requirements for licensed commercial breeders, animal shelters, and animal dealers. Those new rules involve requirements for temperature and humidity, bigger primary enclosures, increased access to water, and stringent cleaning and sanitation requirements. The animal control supervisor at the Ames Animal Shelter said the rules are long overdue. Sunday's Trib had a long takeout on the impact last year's murder of Iowa State University student Celia Barcena Rosamena had on Ames. Among other things, the city has reconfigured its efforts to address public safety, crime prevention, and homelessness on city property, including its 36 parks. More lighting has been added to those parks, and pathways have been cleared of invasive vegetation. Police patrols through park areas have increased. Sunday's paper also reported on the environmental activists who gathered outside City Hall last Friday, part of a nationwide movement to bring awareness to climate change. Also Sunday, a report about the recent declining enrollment at Iowa State University, which came as no surprise to university officials who had predicted that this would happen. This semester enrollment is about 33,000. And, of course, there were several stories on the sports pages about Iowa State University's 72-20 football victory over Louisiana Monroe at Jack Trice Stadium. On Tuesday, the Trib reported that a jogger who was out for a run last Sunday night in a neighborhood near Benchell Park in Ames was hit on the head and stabbed at least three times. The victim suffered non-life-threatening injuries. The assault took place on Carroll Avenue between 5th and 7th Streets. Police said the attack was random, with no apparent motive. The hunt was on for a suspect. Also Tuesday, word that the Federal Highway Administration had told the city of Ames that the colorful crosswalks at 5th Street and Douglas Avenue, crosswalks celebrating the city's diversity, did not comply with standards used by road managers to design traffic control devices across the nation. The Fed said the display of color creates dangerous conditions for pedestrians. City Attorney Mark Lambert said he did not believe the Highway Administration had any jurisdiction over the matter because Douglas and Fifth are not federal roads, highways, or interstates. But a federal spokeswoman said the government does have jurisdiction. On Tuesday night, the City Council decided not to respond to the Feds. Wednesday brought the latest updates on the ongoing saga of what did or did not happen 2 weeks ago after the University of Iowa-Iowa State football game at Jack Trice Stadium. University of Iowa President Bruce Harrell questioned whether the annual game should continue unless fans, band members, and athletes can be protected. This after band members at the U of I claimed that one of their members suffered broken ribs and another was assaulted as they left the stadium after the game. On Tuesday, ISU Athletic Director Jamie Pollard said Iowa's band members left through the wrong gate outside the stadium. He said that led to a logjam with existing fans and might have resulted in physical contact. Pollard also said that any heckling or pelting of Iowa's band members by fans was, in Pollard's words, embarrassing and inexcusable. But he also said Iowa State's band members have been subjected to similar abuse while performing in Iowa City. Iowa State President Wendy Winterstein said the school wants to find ways to make football games safer for fans. Wednesday also brought word that the third and final suspect accused of breaking into a Kelly home a year ago and assaulting an 82-year-old woman had withdrawn his guilty plea for the second time. 20-year-old Manuel E. Balderas will go on trial in December. The two other men accused in connection with the crime, well, they've pleaded guilty and will testify against Balderas. And there was word that the Ames School District had started a half-hour podcast that features audio and video conversations with district and community members. Thursday brought troubling news that anyone who used the City of Ames website to pay recent parking tickets could be at risk because of a data breach. The city said about 1,500 people used the website from July 30th to September 12th. That's when the breach took place. The information that was stolen includes encrypted credit or debit card numbers, first and last names, home addresses, and email addresses. Yes, it was a bad one. Everyone who used the website is being urged to monitor their bank accounts, and you should do it frequently. Also yesterday, a report that the Ames City Council had directed staff to prepare a proposal for a three-part internet consulting contract. That contract could cost anywhere from $100,000 to $175,000. It's going to come out of the city's hotel-motel tax fund. The goal is to find a way to improve internet reliability citywide. There was also word that the City of Ames had used eminent domain to get property rights at 1400 South Grand Avenue. That's a key piece of land needed for that $18 million project designed to extend Grand Avenue to South 16th Street. The property is owned by the Coldwater Golf Links. Today's paper reported that the hunt still on for the man who stabbed and wounded that woman on Carroll Street near Banshell Park in Ames on Sunday night. Police said they are working on a number of tips they've received since the incident. Also a story about a new lab at the Iowa State University Research Park. It's the ISU Digital Manufacturing Lab powered by Alliant Energy. And it's designed to help rural businesses around the state improve and expand. And one more story from today's paper, Paul, a story about three new homemade lunch options now available for students in the Ames School District. Chicken quesadillas, stromboli grinders, and whole grain chicken and rice casserole. And, Paul, I remember when I was going to school, I used to bring a peanut butter sandwich in my lunch pail. Today it's a little different.
Oh, yeah. Whole grains and healthy food, and I just wonder why we're still alive. Oh, by the way, in the second half hour, we have the Ames Progressive Alliance coming, and they're going to have a guest, a mom who is active in the effort to curb gun violence. That's commendable. But I'll tell you what.
And Paul, you caught up on that one. I'm glad you read
that.
Yeah,
I did. But, you know, looking back at school lunches, yes. I just remember all kinds of great things in the sack that mom surprised me with. She was so creative. You know, those little brown paper bags. It was a nice time to be alive.
Yeah, I think I had graham crackers in my peanut butter
sandwich. Oh, graham crackers, yeah. Yes.
And
oh,
maybe
yes,
some milk. Yes. That was a long time ago. Good for you, Ames School District, for your new lunch menu. That's your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune, as well as reminiscences from Paul and me about our lunch exploits decades ago. Now, after this brief time out, the new director of the Ames Public Library joins us. She's here now, right beside us, and she'll have some food for thought. Yeah, that's a pun. About what the future holds for our library.
I love that. Well, welcome back to Local Talk. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. It's 7 minutes after the hour on this Friday, and we're very pleased to have as our first guest today the new leader of our Ames Public Library, Sheila Schoenfer. Sheila, welcome to Local Talk, your first time here.
Thank you.
You are an Iowa native. You have gone away for a while and come back. Tell us a little bit about your background.
So I was born and raised in Davenport, Iowa, and went to college there, went to St. Ambrose University. And then I ended up going to graduate school at Kent State in Ohio. So I'd kind of left the area, was looking for my next, you know, professional position. And life took me to Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn.
So I didn't have a driving desire to go live in New York City, but the opportunity came up. I did not know a soul in New York, and I went, and I had a long, wonderful career there. I was at Brooklyn Public Library for 23 years and kind of came up from the ground up, worked in all kinds of branches, started as a children's librarian and worked at a range of branches. But when I left, I was the director of neighborhood services. So essentially what that was overseeing our 58 branches. And so that was a big job, a lot of different neighborhoods, some cool building projects, lots of personnel projects and opportunities. But I was looking I'd had in my mind that I wanted to come back to the Midwest. I still have family here. My mom and brother are in Davenport. I have a sister in Blair, Nebraska, and a brother in Minneapolis. So Ames is sort of the sweet spot in the middle of all those. And I was exploring opportunities, and the opportunity in Ames came up, and I went for it, and it's one of the best decisions I've ever made.
Well, I can't help but think about Mary Tyler Moore. Here's Sheila in New York City, throwing her hat in the air. Here I am. Now, how did you find an apartment in the city?
You know, I lucked into it. Actually, it's interesting because one of the people who hired me was from Sioux City area.
Is that right?
So there was an Iowa
small
connection.
World.
And another one had a roommate, one of the HR people had a roommate who had gone to St. Ambrose. Uh-huh. So it was kind of an interesting little connection right from the bat. But they kind of guided me a little bit and told me what neighborhoods to check out. And I got into a really – a nice neighborhood and a great apartment. And I lucked out.
What a big change it is to go from Iowa to the Big Apple, if you will. Was it scary? Was it exhilarating? Was it all of that or what?
It was all of that. And I would say it probably – in hindsight, I don't know why it wasn't scarier, but it wasn't. You know, I did okay. And I think I knew what I knew I wanted to work in public libraries, and that's – Brooklyn has a lot of what public libraries are about.
Now, the library in Brooklyn, is that an old building with columns and everything?
Interestingly, it is not. It had originally been designed that way. The one in New York, Manhattan, is. But Brooklyn has its own system, and it has a little bit more of an art moderne style.
And you said there had 58 branches.
Yes.
That's a lot of administrative responsibility.
It is. But I had a wonderful team and worked with amazing people. And you know, because I think I had come up in the library system, I knew a lot of people. I knew what it was to do the day in, day out, and you had a good perspective there. So
now I know you have family here, as you've just said, but what prompted you to come back to Iowa? I mean, you were there 20 years. I mean, you're a big city girl now. You're Mary Tyler Moore in Minneapolis, and you're making it on your own, and here you are back here. How did that
happen?
Well,
Iowa always stays in you a little bit, and I knew what it was to like the quality of life that you can have in the Midwest, and I miss that a little bit. New York's wonderful, and there's a lot of amazing things to do, but there's some downsides too. And I was looking just for a different pace in life, just a change. And it's the opportunity. You know, I had a lot of responsibilities, but I wasn't the director. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was the next step in my career, mm-hmm. you know, even in a library in a different place or a different size.
Well, I think that's a big deal, the quality of life in the Middle West. I heard on the radio yesterday that the average commute time in Iowa is 19 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, wouldn't that appeal to anyone in San Francisco, Los Angeles, or Connecticut to New York?
Absolutely.
Our quality of life is flyover. A lot of people don't understand how convenient life is in the Middle West. And you say the pace is different and all that sort of
Absolutely. I think you can be a little more intentional. You're not always reacting to everything. Mm-hmm. I don't think you realize the level of daily stress you might encounter in kind of big city.
You know, you were there, since you were there from 1996 on, you were there during 9/11. You had some experiences there. It had to be a horrible thing.
I have a story there. I was actually on a plane to come back. So I was in Chicago, and it had gotten bumped the night before. It had been weather, and so I kept getting bumped. But my brother lives in Chicago. And so I had said, I'll just stay with him and go the next morning. So I was on a plane that was ready to take off, and they were motivated to go because they had so many delays, and it was a jam-packed plane. I was on the very back, last seat, middle seat in the last row, and they were anxious to get their gate time, and we pulled away from the gate, and they returned, and I'll never forget because they said, we're returning to the gate. There's been terrorist activity in New York.
Oh, good heavens.
And I remember that phrasing exactly. So they knew, right, because that was right, 8 o'clock Chicago, 9 o'clock New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in Chicago for about a week because there was no planes flying.
Wow.
And by the time I finally did, my flight back had about, 10 people on it. But it did. I knew a lot of people who, luckily, no one personally close who was killed, but a lot of people who were close to.
Sure.
Had some
and a lot of the folks you knew went through the trauma of actually seeing that. They had stories to tell.
Mm-hmm. And my current husband, we weren't together then, but he had his stories too.
Well, now your husband's with you here. And he had to find employment in the area also, right?
He's kind of exploring things. He's a landscape architect. Oh, yeah. And so he's kind of just taking stock, kind of thinking what his next move will be. He did a lot of rooftop gardens. That was kind of his niche in New York City, which is kind of cool. So he's kind of seeing, you know, where his fit is here.
So here we are in Ames, and what do you find when you walk into the office?
Well, actually, it's a beautiful building. Their renovation was wonderful. And my office is in the older part.
I love the older part.
I do, too. It's beautiful, and it's a wonderful office to have because they have those really tall, like, double-story or, you know, really tall windows. So if I come in the side door, I come up that way and see that. But otherwise, you know, I make a point to walk around during the day and kind of, you know, if I have a question for someone rather than email it or call, I walk around and gives me a chance to see, you know, the library in action. And I think our youth area is always bustling. The whole library is bustling. But the youth area on certain days this summer was very busy. Yeah. It had a whole range of programs. So, and we, if you went around the lunch hour, we'd serve summer meals. So you saw people having free lunches. That was wonderful. You know, we had the literary grounds. I like that part in particular. Yeah. It's got the exposed brick, and that's a great place to pop in.
I'm in your library all the time, checking out books, reading newspapers. I see Paul Hertz there, our great engineer. He's often there at the library. But, and it's a great library, but libraries have changed, haven't they, in the last couple of decades since you got into this thing? It is a community gathering spot. It's a community center now, isn't it?
It is. It is. We still have, you know, our traditional books, but we've also expanded to e-books and downloadable movies and audio books and music and that's wonderful, but like you're right, the meeting room space, the gathering space, I think libraries always had that, but it's certainly increased over the last several years, and not just here, I think across the country. Mm-hmm. And the great design of this new building really afforded us to have a lot of meeting room space, and it is heavily used. So people can use it for, you know, regular meetings of their club or their organization. But we also have like community-led programs. So there's like a camera club, a knitting club, and those will be community-led programs. And that's a lovely opportunity too. If you just had one meeting room and the library and different partners were, you know, using that solely, wouldn't have as much opportunity for community-led programs.
Well, I like that auditorium or meeting room with all the pane glass.
Yes.
You know, right there, it's like being on the Today Show. All the pedestrian traffic is walking by that pane glass area.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's so modern. When I've been in there, I've been impressed by how diverse the population of Ames is.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of people from different cultures. And I just think, well, this is a place where they can go to get used to living in the Midwest, get the flavor of Ames. Just a lot of diversity in the people I see there. That means there's a comfort level at the library you might not have elsewhere if you're new in this country, you know.
I'd agree, and I think that's a great, you know, first place for someone who's new to Ames or even new to the country to come into their local library, because you do get connected to a lot of resources. It's a lot of free programs and a lot of community. We had a, you know, we make an effort to buy diverse collections, and we're going to be exploring even our world language collection a little bit more in the upcoming years. But the youth area did a welcome column. It has "You're welcome" in all kinds of languages, and we've had a lot of patrons stop and say, "Oh, thank you so much." So just that little gesture, that little architectural, you know, design feature has really brought a lot of goodwill.
Now, I don't want to put you on the spot in terms of numbers of books that you have. You have a lot of books.
Yes.
And I can't read nearly all of them, okay? I try. I'm working on it. But where do libraries in the 21st century fit into the digital age? I mean, we know you're a book repository, but things are changing. So what's the future in terms of digital and the digital age where kids are getting information, people are getting information from their computers, their laptops, their phones, all this?
Well, the traditional book is still there and used heavily. I think traditionally libraries might see a little decline there as they see an increase in digital, also audiobooks, e-books. Those are on the rise, but they still don't make up the majority of our collection. we continue to build that each year. But and I think people are getting used to that format and enjoying it. We do have, I'll put a little plug in, sometimes people, they're not sure how to do it or how to set it up. And it's usually once you get it set up, it's so easy. But we offer one-on-one assistance. So if you want to bring your device in and have someone kind of walk you through it, mm-hmm. we have someone who can walk you through getting set up so you can read your e-books and things online. I think we also, you know, the online opportunities give you a chance to connect. We buy databases. So it's vetted, good quality information. So you don't have to just rely on a random Google search. Mm-hmm. You can use some vetted resources. So we have things like – and sometimes they're not just research material. We have a database where you can learn languages. Mm-hmm. So Mango Languages, you can kind of step your way through and learn a language. We have the Chilton Car Manual online if you work on your cars. Remember those books?
Yeah, I do.
They were big, chunky books, but it's online. But there's also like job resources. So you can get guidance on setting up a resume. Librarians will absolutely help you with that as well. But there's also things like practice ACT tests, practice HSE, the high school equivalency tests, or GRE or any of those, or flashcards for skill building if you're going to be taking a test, or there's sample firefighters exam. So there's good job and college readiness resources that are available from these databases too.
Paul and I are thinking about becoming firefighters, so we're going to have to check that book out.
I'd be the first one to fall off the ladder.
That's often a popular need, though. Some people want those.
No, people have no idea those resources exist.
No.
Practice tests, and that's new to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all of my life growing up, when people had a question, now they go to the Internet, you know. But it used to be they called the library, didn't they?
They still do, don't you worry.
They still call
the library. And that's one of the nice things. I think Ames Public Library in particular, you know, we have really fabulous staff, and they go that extra mile. You don't feel like you're inconveniencing anyone, and the pace is not so hectic. They can really give you the time to kind of step you through your research needs.
I will attest to that because I've asked dumb questions, at least dumb to me, right, at your library staff on a variety of issues over the years. They are always kind to me. Now, maybe it's because they think I'm just an old guy out there. But I'll tell you this. Everybody's very kind. The help is tremendous. You do have Wi-Fi. People need to know that so mm-hmm. they can plug into your free Wi-Fi.
Yes.
There are a lot of things you guys help with, a tremendous number of things.
Wi-Fi, printing. You know, how many people – not everyone has – I don't have a printer at home anymore. You know, I think that we've kind of shifted in our what we have in our personal homes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on the we tend to a more mobile environment. So you might not have a printer. So printing and copying, you know, some of those uses are people use the library for all the time.
Oh, that happens to me all the time. I make all my copies there, do the printing there. I just couldn't exist without the library. And, you know – one of the things that I really like about the library are the – and I look at this at our library. I'm on the foundation board at Story City for Bertha Bartlett Library, and we're always looking at program and everything. What I love is the fact that we have such an exposure with children.
Mm-hmm.
All of our reading programs we have mm-hmm. – and I'm sure you do too. You have the basic elementary, and then you have your tween programs and your high school book clubs. And I think that – that's really what creates that habit in somebody to go to the library as a resource when they're young.
It's great that
you
see
that. I'm sure you got them too.
Yes. Well, and it's timely that you bring that up because tomorrow we have a great program called Step Into Storybooks, and it's a partnership with Raising Readers mm-hmm. in Story County, mm-hmm. and it's a long time program. I think they've been doing it for at least the last 15 years. But the idea that you bring stories to life. So there'll be about 15 stations all over the library, people dressed up in costume of literary characters, some of them. And then they'll do hands-on activities. So each station is focused on a book, and there'll be related activities. So you can kind of just wander around the library, hit different stations, and have a lot of fun. And children get a free book.
Really?
Now, when is this going to happen, Sheila?
This is tomorrow, Saturday, September 28th, from 9 a.m. to noon.
One of the great things, Paul and Sheila, that I see when I walk in the early evening, I walk all around downtown, I live nearby, is when I look into the window there in your library or your children's area, there are parents with their kids
mm-hmm.
reading books and sitting on these wonderful cushions you have there. It is heartwarming to see that. kids with their parents at the library. That's wonderful.
It is. It is. Early literacy is a big part of what the library offers.
Yeah.
You know what I like in the library? DVDs,
yeah,
movies.
Yeah,
you have a collection of those too, I bet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone told me when I was first getting ready to move to Ames, they said, oh, well, we don't have an art house cinema, but the library owns, of the top 100 foreign films, the library owns 99 of them.
Oh, wow.
So I haven't personally checked that out. Oh, wow. But we do have a really good collection of DVDs.
Well, I am a film buff. I'll be over.
You should check that out.
You also have Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, and I read it periodically because I'm a big mystery. And it's the only place, the only library in the country that I found it. I lived around the country, and you guys have it, and that's great. What do you want the library to do in the future? I mean, the library's working. It's working well. People love it. Where do you want to take it? What do you want to do?
Well, we're at the point where we're going to be gearing up to map out our next strategic plan.
Wow.
So kind of the library's 5-year plan. So we're taking stock of what we laid out in the plan previously, and they've really hit all their goals pretty much. But kind of to look at areas, hey, did we start on that path and not quite finish?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there more work to do? So we're looking at that. But it's going to be the opportunity. So there'll be some staff review and assessment and kind of input, also from our board. But we're going to go out to the broader community. So we'll probably do it in the form of a survey, probably some larger community, just, you know, like a big meeting in our auditorium to kind of help us distill what matters to our community. And then probably some more targeted focus groups. But if I had to guess, I think areas of outreach, you know, the library is great at being in the library.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our bookmobile that goes to lots of places. And we have our Smiles program that hits our early childhood daycares and preschools.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always... You know, there's always an opportunity for someone who's not maybe coming into the library to kind of go out to where they are and connect with them. So that could be an opportunity. I think there's some opportunity. Sometimes you look at technology, what's happening there. One thing, I guess this would even be in the short term, not even a long-term 5-year plan or anything like that. But we have something called novel ideas where staff can percolate a new idea.
Yep.
And one of them was about getting some equipment to convert your old photos, slides, DVD or
that's a great
idea.
VHS
into more digital format. So there's equipment, so we'll probably do something like that. And then I think long term there's opportunity to work with like entrepreneurs.
Yep.
And maybe even some looking at some college readiness things. So
fantastic.
That sounds exciting, and I think that the library will always be here, and it's always going to be progressive, always going to be in touch with the needs of people as times change. I'm sure you have a good board that you're working with.
And you're wonderful.
Do you have a foundation board also?
We do.
That's our structure, too. Mm-hmm. So,
Sheila, we are out of time today, but welcome to Ames.
Thank you.
We're happy to have you here. Welcome to Local Talk. We were happy to have you here today.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Paul?
Well, stay with us. There's much more ahead. After this brief timeout, members of the Ames Progressive Alliance will be here with our guest, Nancy Gebhardt, an Ames mom who is in the forefront of efforts to stop gun violence.
Thank you.
members of the Ames Progressive Alliance here.
You've been listening to Local Talk Friday. I'm Carolyn Myers.
Today, moms demand action for gun sense in America. Nancy Gephardt, Ames co-lead for the Iowa chapter.
Good morning, Nancy. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into what's going on with the Iowa chapter of Moms Demand Action, can you tell us some more about what the Moms Demand Action is as a nationwide organization?
Absolutely. Moms Demand Action is a grassroots movement of Americans fighting for public safety measures to protect people from gun violence. As an organization, we fall under the umbrella organization of Everytown for Gun Safety, which is an organization of 6 million followers, the largest movement for gun safety in the country.
So how did this organization get started?
Moms Demand Action started the day after the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012 with a woman named Shannon Watts. She was a mother of five and had a moment after watching the horrific news from that shooting that she said, enough, we have to do something, with a social media post is how it started.
When the organization is called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, what is it meant by gun sense?
Gun sense is recognizing that we are a culture of gun owners and we have to be a responsible culture if we're going to be that. It's something that's advocating for public safety measures that are proven to be effective in reducing death by gun.
Do you have to be a mom to be a member of Moms Demand Action?
Absolutely not. That is something we get asked a lot. I am a mom, but not all of our members are moms. We have young men. We have all different people that join this movement because they've realized that enough is enough and we have to do something to end the gun violence epidemic in our country. Recently, under the umbrella of Every Town for Gun Safety, there's also been another grassroots organization called Students Demand Action. So students are welcome to be a part of Moms Demand Action or the Students Demand Action group, too.
Are there chapters in all 50 states?
There are. Yep.
How many are in Iowa?
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. I think we have 7 or 8 different chapters in Iowa. Ames, Des Moines, Dubuque, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Council Bluffs. There are a few in the probably more populated areas of Iowa, but I would say at least 7 or 8 within our state.
With Central Iowa, do we have one chapter for Story County, or are there multiple chapters for Central Iowa?
We have one chapter based in Ames for Story County.
How many people participate in Story County?
Now we have 5 people on the kind of leadership group for Story County, and within our total membership, I would say 30 to 40. And we're a 100% volunteer organization, and so that's something that people can think about if it's something that's interesting for them or something that they want to work towards with their volunteer service work.
So you said there's 7 million people, right? About 6 million?
6 million.
6 million in 7 years. So how did the organization grow so fast?
Through a lot of hard work. That is something that we talk about a lot. Members and volunteers for Moms Demand Action go everywhere. One of our kind of hashtags or our catchphrases is that you can expect us. There are conversations that need to be happening throughout the country in every state and locally. And so we make sure that our volunteers are present and that we show up in our red shirts and we're making a visible presence and making sure that we're holding people accountable and having conversations about the epidemic of gun violence in our country and talking about how we can work to end it.
So when you say you show up, where do you show up?
A lot of different places. We're primarily focused on policy, on legislative action. And so certainly in any and every political arena, we show up, whether that's with a senator's open forum. We actually share lists of when public political events are happening and communicate about who is able to go, trying to recruit numbers of volunteers to go and attend and to be prepared to ask a question about gun violence, not just to be there. Although our red shirts do say a lot without actually having to say words sometimes. But we attend a lot of political events, rallies, candidate forums, those types of things from the very local level to the national level. Then we also do a lot of awareness building specifically around some of the communities that are disproportionately impacted by gun violence. In Ames most recently, we attended Pride Fest and talked to people in the LGBT community in Ames about the impact of gun violence and what we can do to work towards ending it. In Des Moines this past summer, again, we were at Pride Fest, but then also the Juneteenth celebration, because we know that gun violence disproportionately impacts the African-American community in our country. And so we do some other awareness events as well, focused on different areas of the gun violence issue.
Now, the gun violence issue is very complex.
Yes.
And it's especially complex, it seems, in the United States. So one of the things I'm curious about is, how do you as moms, when you become part of Moms Demand, how do you get educated? How do you learn?
Yeah.
That's
one of the really wonderful things about being partnered with Everytown for Gun Safety. Everytown hires researchers and is paying researchers to do the work related to understanding the gun violence epidemic in the U.S. that our government has consistently said that they would not support. And so we are given really strong statistics and data regularly that is being checked and rechecked regularly and updated and communicated through all of the moms, volunteers, especially through the leadership, and then disseminated down through the membership. They have an online education platform that we use that we can take particular training on very specific issues related to gun violence. So if there's something that a member has decided to get involved with Moms Demand Action for a particular reason, we can direct them to training and information and data and education related to that particular topic. Or it can be, as in a leadership role, training related to organization. How do you organize in this movement and how do you do it effectively? And so having that support from Everytown, because we are 100% volunteers, is really, really significant.
You say you're 100% volunteer, and I'm going to make kind of an assumption here that an organization with moms in the title probably has a pretty flat hierarchy. How does that work in the Iowa chapter? How do you make decisions?
We're a very community decision-making group. We do have a Iowa chapter lead, Katie Albrecht, who is wonderful, and she is just 100% a cheerleader for everybody. We share ideas collectively in multiple ways. We have weekly phone calls. We have regular meetings where all of us throughout the state get together and share ideas and kind of creative ways of going about solving things, but then also through a very structured and guided framework. So there are certainly things we can do and things we can't do, or things we want to do and things we don't want to do. And we follow that framework while still just showing up and being encouraging for each other at the same time. It's exhausting work, not just because of the time commitment, but because of the emotional content. And so we do make sure that we're caring for each other and for ourselves so that we can continue doing the work.
Well, Nancy, what moves you to do this kind of work?
Everybody has a reason for being involved with Moms Demand Action, and mine specifically was because I have experienced being in a domestic abuse situation where guns were used as a form of control. And I know the statistics now that women who are in that type of situation where guns or firearms are present in the home are 5 times more likely to be killed. And so thinking about the beauty of my life now and wanting to help other women who are potentially in a situation similar to what I am or I was is really what drives me to stay in the movement. And then secondly, I have a beautiful, wonderful daughter, and she deserves better than this. And this shouldn't be such a fear of hers and every child when firearms and gun violence is the second leading cause of death of all children in the United States. It's the first leading cause of death of Black children in the United States, and that's just not okay with me.
Nancy, thank you for sharing that personal side of the story and also those horrific statistics. I think sometimes we focus so much on a mass shooting event that we forget that gun violence mm-hmm. is a part of everyday life mm-hmm. in too many American communities and families. And we each bring, I'm sure, our own motivations to the table in any movement that we join. but I appreciate you sharing yours.
This is KHOI Story City, Ames. Nancy, thank you so much for sharing that personal story, because I think that people forget that, you know, that gun violence is so personal for a lot of people and they've experienced many different levels of it. But I'm going to bring us back more to the regulation side of things. What is the ultimate goal of Moms Demand Action?
I don't want to use the word ultimate goal, like we would be done mm-hmm. if something happened, because I think there's always movement to be made. I could talk about our current goals, but really, I mean, the thing that we work towards is a community, a country, a nation free from gun violence. And it's something that we believe is possible. And it comes, it's not an anti-gun stance, but a gun sense stance.
Mm-hmm.
Cultivating a culture of responsible gun ownership that includes public safety measures on a lot of different levels, on the policy level as well as cultural shift.
Mm-hmm. Right now, and I mean, this has been the true for a long time, that, the whole gun situation and policy and regulations have been very difficult socially and politically for people to talk about, let alone really make any kind of change. What kind of actions have been happening here in Iowa?
It's a hard movement, but we do have wins regularly. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we do focus on, too, within our volunteer work, is recognizing that there is movement. It's incremental, and sometimes that's harder to see. But there definitely is change happening. And one thing recently that's kind of gained momentum that we're also focused on in Iowa is our movement that we're calling Groceries Not Guns, which is talking to business owners and companies specifically about changing their open carry policy in their stores.
Mm.
This is something we've been working on for years. Our first success with this initiative was actually with Starbucks when they changed their open carry policy, and that was 5 years ago. And more recently, though, within the last month, there have been more than a dozen companies throughout the country that have changed their open carry policy and said they no longer allow open carry within their stores, including locally Aldi, Walmart, a lot of other food stores that we don't have here in Iowa. But we're still working on Hy-Vee. That's our number one directive with Groceries Not Guns in Iowa, because Hy-Vee so far has refused to change their open carry policy. So everyone who's listening to somebody at Hy-Vee about that. But their stance is that they're following the law, which they are. And the fact is, open carry doesn't make anybody safer. In fact, it makes a lot of people more unsafe. You should never have to worry when you're choosing apples whether that person with a gun on their hip is a good guy with a gun or a bad guy with a gun.
The stores that allow people open carry are following the law. When the stores that are the retail businesses that decided to not allow open carry in their stores, how are they justifying that?
They are justifying it by saying they're listening to their customers. And that's really something that Moms Demand Action has been pushing and asking people to engage with those companies with, specifically Moms Demand Action members, but then also members of the community, to say that they are going to essentially vote with their pocketbook. They're going to take their money somewhere else if they have to be worried about the potential threat of gun violence when they're doing their grocery shopping. And so that's their statement, is that their customers are asking for this, and so they're giving it to their customers.
Okay. Interesting. America has a long history of boycotts mm-hmm. and pressures on businesses to undertake different social and political positions. We'll see how this one plays out. I want to circle back to the legislature. I've heard something mentioned called the Stroller Brigade. What's the Stroller Brigade?
The Stroller Brigade, I think, is referencing the fact that we are Moms Demand Action. If you want women involved in politics, we have to change the way that we think about children in politics. And so it's emphasizing that your children are welcome, your families are welcome, because otherwise it's too difficult to participate and to engage. As you can see here, you can't on the radio, obviously, I have my daughter with me, and she does a lot of Moms Demand Action work with me, because I'm a single mom. And in order for me to be able to do this, she becomes a part of it. And so that's what that's referencing, is that we do bring our children, we bring our families, because we do this for them, engage them in the work as well.
When you go to the legislature, you meet with people across both sides of the aisle?
Absolutely. We're a nonpartisan organization.
And tell us a little bit, if you could, an experience that you had in, you don't have to name the particular legislature. If this is a ring of infamy, we'll leave that alone.
Sure.
But what's it like meeting a legislator in Iowa and bringing up the topic of gun sense?
Well, it completely depends who you're talking to, obviously. But for the most part, I guess I could maybe give general descriptions of someone from both sides of the aisle. Everybody recognizes that this is an issue. That's not a question. That everybody recognizes that this is not okay. But the process of going about change is approached very differently. Typically, if I find someone who maybe feels intimidated by the Moms Demand Action presence, the response is typically to defend, to say, well, this is what I've tried to do, and it hasn't worked, to kind of offer the ideas that they had that potentially didn't advance anywhere, and to not really talk about the issue as a present day, what are we going to do now? It's more of a defensive, this is what I tried to do, and it didn't work, and so I'm kind of
stuck.
Stuck, yeah. Yeah. On both sides, they'll just blame the other, depending on who you're talking to, that there's not a lot of cross-aisle collaboration or discussion or compromise happening.
One of the things that's really interesting about gun sense, gun regulation, is it seems like in America, when polling is done, an overwhelming majority of people support a lot of the things that moms would promote as gun sense,
mm-hmm.
Background checks that are effective, limitations on magazine size, limitations on sales to minors, et cetera, et cetera. Yet, we find ourselves in a position where the laws have not changed in the direction that it would appear that the vast majority of Americans, including some NRA members,
mm-hmm.
or maybe many NRA members, are not opposed to. What does moms have to say about that?
That you need to contact your senators. You need to reach out and speak and use your voice and demand it. You have to engage in politics. I think that's a conversation I have with a lot of people in Iowa is, I'm not really into politics. Well, everything is political. And so choosing not to engage in politics is a political choice. Nationally, we did in the last election elect a gun sense majority to the House of Representatives, and they passed H.R. 8 in February of 2019, which would require criminal background checks on all gun sales, something more than 90% of Americans support, like you said. Mitch McConnell still has refused to even allow a vote on it in the Senate. Moms Demand Action makes it very easy to get involved in this fight, and all you have to do is text the word CHECKS, C-H-E-C-K-S, to 64433. It'll ask you what your zip code is, and it'll immediately connect you to your senator's office. It'll even give you a script of what to say, because I know some people get nervous of, well, I'm not exactly sure what I'm talking about, but I know that it's important. So it'll give you a sample script of what you should say, how to identify yourself, what are the important things to mention, and connects you right to your senator's office. They have to keep track of those calls and those constituent concerns. And the more we call and the more we pressure them, eventually they're going to have to listen.
Well, lots of people in Iowa say, well, I don't want to be involved in politics, or I don't like fighting, or I want to be nice, the perennial mm-hmm. Iowa nice. So how do you, as an organization, you as volunteers, how do you break through that, shall we say, little Iowa reticence to be involved?
When you can actually talk to somebody face-to-face, it's not that difficult in Iowa if you can get them to talk to you, because we all have common ground on this issue. Everybody wants to keep their family safe. You can all agree on that. And if you start from there, common ground is really easy to find, and recognizing that is our foundational goal, is to keep our families safe. And again, then going to something like criminal background checks on all gun sales. Typically, the response I get when I talk about things like that with Iowans is, well, don't we already require that. It's confusion and a misunderstanding of what the law is. Even talking about open carry in Iowa, people will say, well, it's illegal to open carry in Iowa. Well, in fact, it's actually not. But people don't know the law. And so the more you can talk to them face-to-face and share the information with them, it's actually pretty easy to at least get agreement or consensus, maybe not to the point of action, but at least a step in the right direction.
We're almost done today. We've had a great guest, Nancy Gephardt, but I have one quick question. We hear a lot about people saying, they're going to come take away my guns. Does moms believe in taking away people's guns?
We do not. We believe in a culture of responsible gun ownership and, again, public safety measures to protect people from gun violence.
Thank you so much, Nancy. This is a lot of great information, and I know that we could talk about this a whole lot longer, and I really respect everything that you're doing, and I think it's great that you're bringing your daughter along because she's getting such a great example of what she can do in the future as a leader in America. Thanks to KHOI Radio and to Nancy again and Moms Demand Actions for sharing about their progressive action dedicated to taking one of the most difficult problems in America, which is, you know, such our pervasive gun violence. Please make sure that you keep up with all the Ames Progressive Alliance activities on our Facebook page and at amesprogressivealliance.org. We do have two upcoming events happening. October 16th, we'll be having a City of Ames School Board Forum, and October 24th, a City Council Forum, both at the Ames Public Library. So make sure you keep those on your calendars. As always, thanks to KHOI for hosting the show. You're doing so much more to move the community forward. You've been listening to Local Talk Friday. I'm Carolyn Myers. Local Talk airs today at noon and 5 p.m. here on KHOI 89.1 FM. And you can hear a recording of the show later today online at khoifm.org, as well as find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production, workshop, as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come on down to the studio and join the Local Talk team. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting Cirque May, Wednesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
The productivity of our farms are amazing, and we've helped keep the markets alive through export. You know, that's something that we've come to depend upon.
That was Seth Watkins, owner of Pinhook Farms in southwest Iowa. Farmers have been hit hard recently by President Donald Trump's trade war with China. This week, though, an interim trade deal with Japan to lower tariffs on beef and pork might give relief to some farmers and ranchers. This deal is a significant step, according to the nonprofit Farmers for Free Trade, who called for more, quote, trade wins, not trade wars, unquote. Clearly, the president's trade policy is key to the Hawkeye State agricultural voters. Here's Story County Republican Party Chair Brett Barker.
Japan's a really important trading partner for the state of Iowa.
But China is still an important trade partner, too. Barker said that despite difficulties in exporting right now,
folks are willing to give some time to hold China accountable because in the long run, they know it's important. But obviously, they're an important trading partner, too. So hopefully there will be some resolution to that. But there have been a lot of positive moves in trade, especially with Canada and with Mexico and with Japan.
Iowa Farmers Union President Aaron Lehman said there needs to be a better approach than back and forth tariffs to holding China accountable for its trade violations, one that involves worldwide trading partners making reasonable demands.
That way we won't be putting farmers as the most vulnerable people when the trade negotiations get tough.
Meanwhile, the Iowa Democratic Party is still working on a plan to make the Iowa caucuses more accessible to people who couldn't previously participate. like shift workers, people with disabilities, people serving overseas, and students. This happened after the DNC rejected their caucus by phone proposal, saying it wouldn't be secure enough. They now propose adding what they call satellite caucuses, in addition to precinct gatherings, at places like factories, group homes, or out-of-state locations for people who would normally vote absentee in a general election. Contrary to the normal next step, where each of Iowa's 99 counties has its own convention, from which delegates then go to the state convention and then the national, the satellite caucuses would feed into just four so-called county conventions. And they could be far from people's homes. University of Iowa professor Douglas Jones, an expert in voting technology, isn't convinced the new plan fosters real participation.
They get their totals reported in the statewide delegate counts. But then how many people from the satellite caucus who are elected as delegates actually go to that fictional county convention and engage in any politics?
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at PacificaNetwork.org and PublicNewsService.org.